90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
And good morning. Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning. Happy Halloween. My name is Beth Pike. And on today's broadcast, we are going to start with the big scary guys of BACA. And that is the Bikers Against Child Abuse. And they have a mission to protect and support children who've been abused. Our host, Melvin Merritt, is going to be talking with Thrasher. And Thrasher's the president of the local chapter of Bikers Against Child Abuse. And also Puck, who is their public relations officer. In the second half, we are going to replay an interview that we had in June, and that was on June 13th with our host, Nancy Leeser, and she was talking with Professor Joan McDowd of the UMKC, also with the UMKC student, Danita Horde. I'll get this out. It's Monday morning. And they're going to talk about their efforts to help grandparents raise their children. And they're working to form groups and to find resources for these families. So stick around for that. And then stay tuned for an expanded calendar of events in the middle of the show. And as always, we've got our 420 drug war news at the end of the show. But up next will be Melvin and his guest.
Welcome to a live edition of Jaws of Justice right here on KKFI 90.1. And I am your host, Melvin Merritt, and in the studio with me is Mr. Thrasher. He's the president of the Kansas City chapter of BACA, Bikers Against Child Abuse Motorcycle Group, and they are the keeper of the children. And with him is Mr. Puck. He's the public relations officer of the group. Mr. Thrasher, tell us a little bit about BACA and how he got started.
BACA started in 1995 by a gentleman named J.P. Lilly. He was our founder. Started in Provo, Utah. At that time, he is basically a licensed child play therapist. And what he had decided to do was he had grown up in a motorcycle community and realized, you know what, he'd like motorcycles, and maybe children that he was helping in the abuse system, you know, would benefit them. So he had got a couple of his brothers together. They went out, and there was like 24 bikes on that ride. And then they realized that the kid or the child basically started to gravitate toward that and realized that, you know what, this is something that may actually could help them. And from there, it just kind of steamrolled.
Tell us a little bit, Mr. Puck. You're the relations officer. Tell me, how did you get involved with this organization, which is a biker, BACA? And tell us how you got involved with this.
I've grown up around bikers my whole life. I'm originally from Houston, Texas. Mm-hmm. So
hold that against him.
No. Yeah, it's I've been around bikers all my life, and so I've always enjoyed it. A number of years ago, a former spouse of mine and I separated, and in that relationship, I adopted my daughter. And after we separated, my former spouse invited my daughter's biological father to come here and stay for a while to visit. And while he was here, he molested my daughter. And that's been an ongoing kind of
thorn in your side, so to speak.
Well, not necessarily for me. It's not about me. It's about her and, right. and helping her kind of deal with that. And when I moved to Kansas City about 3 years ago, I decided I wanted to kind of be part of this movement of fighting child abuse and empowering children, mm-hmm. And be the guy that I tell my daughter that I am, and that is to go out and help people and do what we do, and that's empower children to not be afraid of the world in which they live.
That's great. I think this is a great organization that y'all have started and that y'all are involved with. But tell us, what are some of the things that you do with the children in terms of having them involved and the things that you're doing, because you are the keepers of the children. So tell us a little bit about that.
Basically, what we end up doing is that whenever we do what we call level one, that's it's when we bring the child into our family. We do what we call an adoption. It's not, we don't physically adopt them and take them and take care of them and things like that. But, you know, as with a family saying, mm-hmm. you know, we're actually bringing them into our family. At that point, what we do is we go out and ride en masse with the chapter, and then we let them realize that, you know what, there's not just these regular people that are there. You know, we are, and this is what we do. And at that point, you know, it's really just a matter of us doing, being there for that child and empowering them. So whenever they have court, what we'll actually do is we'll actually go to court with them. We assign them two primaries, and that's two primary contacts. So that way,
what is it? What's the age group?
It varies. I mean, abuse really doesn't know an age, but with children, we will actually start going to court with them whenever they're pretty much allowed to testify at their point. Mm-hmm. But then also if families, you know, they're going to go and testify for them as well. So it's usually around I'm going to say 5 on up to 18.
Okay. So, Mr. Putt, how do you target these families or these children in order to, you know, gear in on trying to assist them and help them?
Part of my job with the chapter is to go out and do agency education. So I go and work with agencies who are already in existence to help abuse children. So with the Children's Division, CASA, COPPA, law enforcement agencies. I go out and educate them about who we are and what we do and how we empower children. And then I give them information, and we have a 1-800 number that folks can call. And when you call that helpline, they'll get you in contact with the chapter that services your region, whatever city and county that you're in within each state. And then that call's forwarded to our child liaison officer, and so that gets the ball rolling.
Yeah, and the targeting actually, his targeting process is actually more veered and steered toward the agencies. Right. You know, we can't just go out and drum up these children. What happens at that point is the agencies, you know, we have our brochures and our flyers out, and Puck goes out and makes his presentations, and from there you hope that at some point that one of those spokespeople for these agencies says, hey, this is a group that can help you. This may fall right within your lines, because we're not for everybody.
Right.
You know, we are a different sort.
Right. You know? And so, in other words, what I'm hearing is that the agencies are the ones that contact you, not you don't contact any.
We make no direct contacts, if I'm right, with the parent. I mean, we just don't go out seeking them as much as mm-hmm. we would really want to help. That's not what we do. Uh-huh. I mean, we want them to reach out to us. Once they reach out to us, and whether it be the parent or whatever, agencies or parents, they're going to reach out to us from there. That starts the ball going.
What are some of the cases when they actually reach out to you? What is the thing that they bring you with in terms of their problems?
Well, they will let us know. I mean, it's kind of a process the way the whole thing works. They'll let us know, you know, hey, my son, my daughter, my grandchild, whatever, they've been abused, whether it be sexual, physical, whatever. And, you know, we need to know if this is something that we can help with, or you know, something that you guys can help us with to pretty much empower that child. And, I mean, some of them are physical, some of them sexual, you know. Mm. A lot of the stuff, the child liaison is probably the one that has to hear the worst. We know nothing as far as members and stuff like that goes. Sure. We don't want to know. We don't care.
Yeah.
We just want to be there to help that child.
Tell me this. Now, let's say you find out that a child, whether it be male or female, has been molested, and a parent has come to you. And what is the first thing that you do for the child or the family?
Well, the first thing that we're going to do is verify and make sure that it's legit.
Okay.
And by
have you had any experiences with it not being legit?
There's a few that throw into custody, and that's pretty much where they pretty much fall into.
Okay.
There's a lot of custody, he said, she said, finger pointing and things like that.
Yeah.
But once that's done, most of these cases are verified by the child liaison. You know, you hope that someone reports it. And by that, you hope that the parent or guardian is going to report it and said, hey, so-and-so molested my kid, and this is what's going on, and that starts it going.
So let's say, for instance, a young male has been molested. What do you guys do in terms of lifting this child up or encouraging this child?
Pretty much what we'll end up doing is we'll, like as I said earlier, we're going to go out. We go, the child liaison and some other members go out and visit this child and make sure this is something that they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't force ourselves on them. If they don't want to be a part of our family, that's cool. You know,
yeah.
We're all right with that.
Yeah.
And then if they decide they want to, all of a sudden they're going to feel this wave of love
mm-hmm.
whenever we all show up 20 and 30 and 40 and 50 deep
right.
to be there and let them know, you know what?
You're protected.
Yeah, here we are. You don't have to worry no more. I mean, I get goosebumps just talking about it. It's the craziest feeling ever.
Yeah, it sounds good. Yeah, it sounds good. Now, we know that the parents is subject or the agency is subject to contact you. Let's say if the parent and the child is somewhat reluctant, you know, to talk with you, is it incident or situation where the parents say, coerce the child to say, hey, talk to them?
No, we will not. Okay. That's their gig. That's not ours.
Okay.
And we're not, I mean, we've had many, many kids that they won't speak. They don't want to talk. But they'll tell their parent as soon as, I mean, we'll go out there. And then as soon as we leave, they're just like, okay, well, you know, hey, if you want to, be a part of us, let us know. If not, mm-hmm. that's cool, you know, later on. And then within 2 hours after we get home, they'll be calling the child liaison and they'll say they want to go. They want to be a part.
What is the biggest targeted age group of children that you most
I couldn't even answer that. I'd be way speaking out of turn.
Yeah.
I mean, we just know that it's you know, one out of every four boys and one out of every five girls are going to be either molested or something in their lifetime.
Sure.
And the average pedophile or perp will prey on at least 400 children in his lifetime.
You know, just looking at you guys, and our audience can't see you unless they know you. You guys are pretty intimidating, you know, looking. Yeah. And so I'm wondering.
I'm a teddy bear.
Yeah.
With teeth, yeah.
So I'm wondering, you know, when they see you, even though that the agencies have contacted you and the mothers or the parents is really excited about y'all and being involved in their case, is it where some of them that haven't met you, but they heard about you through agencies, and then when you
children
show up
or adults,
either one, you know. Kids, and I understand that you said children, if they don't want to be bothered, you right. back off of them.
Right. Children are, I mean, I think to really understand how what BACA goes is those kids are the boss, bottom line.
Right. Mm.
And yes, we may have an intimidating presence amongst ourselves and you know, but the thing of it is they realize, you know what, we're there for you. We're not there to scare you, but we're also not going to be scared either.
Right.
You know, and that's I think they grasp that. I think they realize that. You know, they just kind of go, I'm not really worried about it now. If I want to go to court, let's go to court. Let's have 10 of these guys show up.
I want to give your information because I know that there are some mothers and dads out there with children that have had some problems and stuff like that, and they love bikers,
mm-hmm.
and they might want to get in touch with you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, give them some information, and we will you know, talk about it a little bit later.
Sure. So, if there's anybody who has seen anything or knows anything, a child who's been abused and wants BACA to be involved, you can call our help line at 1-866-71-ABUSE. And that'll put you in contact with our national answering system, and they just let them know what city and state you're in, and they'll put you in contact with the local chapter. If you want more information about BACA and what we do, you can go to our website at www.bacaworld.org. And if you ride and you want to help kids and you're interested, we have our monthly meetings for our chapter on the first Sunday of every month at 3:30 p.m. at the Elks Lodge at 515 East 99th Street in Kansas City, Missouri.
You come listen to me preach.
You come listen to Thrasher preach.
So
he's awesome.
What is it that once you have your meetings, what is the number one thing that you focus on with your meeting, or is it just part of your organizing, that kind of a thing? You know?
In our meetings?
Yeah, in your meetings. What Basically, is the thing that you preach about?
I preach about our mission.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's these guys in my chapter, as much as they hate to love me, no, it's kind of like the thing of it is I'm totally mission focused.
Absolutely.
And I want everybody in my chapter to stay mission focused. Mm-hmm. And whenever I'm up there talking,
it's only about the mission.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I will say the word me a lot. I will say, you know, my group a lot, or me. But it's not me that I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. These are my brothers and these are my sisters. Mm-hmm. And these are the people that I'm relating to. You know, they're me. Without them, there is no Thrasher.
So I hear that, you know, I just heard you allude to the fact that you have sisters in your chapter.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes.
So
yes. My wife is our child liaison.
So. Okay. And so basically the members are their spouse and their girlfriends and things like that.
Well, I mean, we have some couples. We also have, you know, ladies and gentlemen who are single who want to help children. We're one of the only organizations that will patch women. Because we can't do this mission without them.
Yep. Sure.
We have children who are afraid of men. We have children who are afraid of women.
Mm-hmm.
We can't do this if we're all just a bunch of dudes hanging around. You know,
we don't have we don't have no color barriers. We don't have no religious barriers. We don't have nothing.
That's great.
You know,
that's great. So, and give that website one more time, just in case somebody was listening and didn't get a chance to write it down.
The website is www.bacaworld.org.
And so is there a number, telephone number attached to that? Attached to that website.
If you go to the website, you'll actually be able to get
to
the number.
You'll be able to see that number.
Yep. Yep.
So tell us a little bit of what's going on next with your organization. What is the upcoming things that you guys are getting ready to do?
We're actually doing a trunk or treat.
Okay.
And we're going to be at Walmart and Lee's Summit. Not right. for that. We're going to do like a Walmart gig, you know, for at Lee's Summit, just basically passing out information, doing awareness, and then we're doing a trunk or treat thing coming up.
And Independence.
In Independence.
On Saturday evenings, afternoon evening at the flea market in Independence. We'll be out there. And we've got... I think
we're rolling down toward the end of the year because for us, we're busy. I work these people to death. So
if someone is out there or just happened to see y'all going down the street, because I noticed you said if you hear a rumble and the streets are shaking or
something.
And tell us, someone looking or driving behind you, what is it that your patch look like? So they can identify that you guys are not just one percenters going down the street.
Basically, our patch is a round patch with a fist on it.
Yes,
and it's got the word BACA across it, and it'll say Bikers Against Child Abuse.
Bikers Against Child Abuse, and that's what the BACA stands for.
Yes, absolutely. Exactly.
So that's great. So that way they can identify with it, you know, and maybe give you a thumbs up.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that's really important that really needs to be kind of put out is, you know, we have a mission. We're not role models for anybody. we will never portray to be role models. We can't be. You know, we don't discriminate on anybody. We can't discriminate. Child abuse doesn't discriminate against children. So why would we want anything to happen any different? So for us, what we really want everybody to do, and Puck and I have talked about it at other places that we've done, it's what we want people to do is, if you know it's happening, if you know it's taking place, say something, reach out, do something, because you could save that kid's life. I mean, in June of 2014 to June of 2015, there was over 10,000 cases of abuse and neglect just in Jackson County. And we are not even touching 1%. The surface.
We're not even touching 1% of those children's lives.
So that just means that there's that much that's not getting reported.
As a black man, I want to encourage people that are listening to the broadcast.
We're only chuckling because...
Yeah. So I wanted you, just in case, you know, someone say, well, you know, and I mentioned that you guys are really intimidating looking, you know, and... But people don't have to be afraid, because your heart is to help children. And so could you give that number in case somebody on the other side of the fence, so to speak, that may want to contact you and get involved in some kind of way? And I'm sure they will.
Certainly. That number is 1-866-71-ABUSE. That's A-B-U-S-E.
That's BACA, Bikers Against Child Abuse. And if you have some children, and we only have a few more minutes, but if you have any children out there that have been abused, I encourage you to get in touch with this club, Biker Club. Their heart is to help the children, surround the children in terms of giving them some support, and let the child know that they're not out there by themselves, that Biker does have their back. And so they need to have that confidence that, you know, they got somebody on their side and it's not just the system. So
we truly believe in the fact that if every one of us has to die to protect that child, that's exactly what we'll do.
That's true. In the studio, I have been your host, Melvin Merritt, right here on KKFI 90.1. And we have Mr. Thrasher. He's the president of the Kansas City chapter of BACA. And Mr. Puck, he's the public relation officer. And we've given the information, so I want to be the first to say thank you. And I really appreciate meeting you guys. You guys are doing a fantastic job.
Thank you for keeping on,
all right?
Appreciate you, sir. Thank you. Thanks
for being here.
Now, the calendar for October 31st. Representative Brandon Ellington, GYRL, 100 Men of Blue Hills, Consolidated Social Work Services, and Love House are hosting a spooky night out for families, trick-or-treat safe place for kids. There will be spooky night activities, scary movies, the haunted field, as well as candy and children's games. You can join them from 6 to 9 p.m., Monday, October 31st, at 3836 Chestnut KCMO. The Kansas City Chapter of Missourians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty will meet Tuesday, November 1st, from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church, 4501 Walnut KCMO. The Black Archives of Mid-America presents a community screening of the new documentary series, Black America Since MLK and Still I Rise. Henry Louis Gates, Jr. looks at the last 50 years of African American history, plus spoken word presentations. Thursday, November 3rd, reception at 6 p.m., program at 6:30 p.m., and the presentation will be at 1722 East 17th Terrace, KCMO. To find out about reservations, check out the Black Archives website at blackarchives.org. The Kansas City Chapter of Empower Missouri's First Friday Forum will be Friday, November 4th, 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Westport Flea Market, 817 Westport Road, KCMO. With us now is Jacob Bosch of Metropolitan Lutheran Ministries to tell us about this month's presentation.
Welcome to the air, Jacob.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for having me on today. Empower Missouri's First Friday Forum is a clearinghouse for discussions about progressive policy issues. And this week, we're going to be talking about for-profit colleges. And for-profit colleges have had quite a bit of attention this year in association with the Trump campaign and Trump University. But there's a larger story there about this multi-billion-dollar business that preys on the poor, contributes to problems associated with poverty and homelessness, conducts themselves with shady recruiting practices, and generally takes advantage of the underserved and underprivileged. So I'm going to be at the Westport Flea Market this Friday discussing this topic, and hope that I can inform a lot of our constituency about the different issues that that come along with this enterprise.
Do you also, Empower Missouri is of course an association of social workers, but also other, you know, the public is also invited. Do you have any particular perks to get them out?
Yeah, so if you are a social worker and need to maintain licensure, you can get 1.5 CEU credits for attending the event. There's also a buffet lunch available.
Anything else that people need to know real quick here?
No, just appreciate it and look forward to seeing folks out there at the Westport Flea Market on Friday, and Love to be there representing Empower Missouri.
And now we'll go back to the rest of the calendar. The KC Area Chapter of Parents of Murdered Children and Other Survivors of Homicide will hold their monthly meeting Friday, November 4th, beginning at 7:30 p.m. at Our Lady of Sorrows Church, 2552 Gillum Road, KCMO. POMC makes the difference through ongoing emotional support, education, prevention, advocacy, and awareness. They meet to provide support and assistance to all survivors of homicide victims while working to create a world free of murder. Give Yourself Real Love is hosting a four-week girls' camp for girls 12 to 18 years of age. The first two parts will be on consecutive Saturdays, November 5th and 12th, with a Friday night sleepover on Friday, November 18th into Saturday the 19th, and finishing with a beauty day on Saturday, November 26th. They are also holding a princess camp for girls 5 to 11. You can find out how to enroll, cost of events, time and location at gyrlplease.org. or by sending an email to MSE@gyrlplease.org. My name is Jeff Humfeld, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website. That's kkfi.org. You are listening to 90.1 FM, Kansas City Community Radio. Next week on Jaws of Justice Radio, host Keith Brownell talks with the group Families for Justice as Healing, and host Allie Catherine Bush talks with Literacy KC. Up next is Nancy and her guests, Joan McDowd and Danita Horde.
Good morning. My name is Nancy Leeser, and our guests this morning are Dr. Joan McDowd and Danita Horde, and they're going to tell us a little bit about their program to help grandparents who are raising their grandchildren. First of all, would each of you tell us a little bit about yourselves, Dr. McDowd?
Sure. Thanks for having us.
I'm a professor in psychology at UMKC. And also director of the UMKC Consortium for Aging in Community. And we are trying to develop more and more programs that reach out and really address the problems of the community.
Thank you. And Danita?
Thanks for having us, Nancy. Yes, I was actually raised by my grandparents. That at least they played a primary role in my upbringing, my brothers and I. And so that's one way that I'm kind of tied to this. I am also a student at the in the graduate program of social work there at UMKC. But my undergrad is in psychology, and that's how Dr. McDowd became my mentor. For
Excellent. Thank you. Dr. McDowd, would you tell us a little bit why you started this program?
Sure. We began by working with the Palestine Missionary Baptist Church, and we had some collaboration there. We put together a team to try and identify some issues related to aging. And one of the things that came up is the importance of intergenerational interaction, and through a variety of conversations, that sort of led to the problem of grandparents raising grandchildren. So it's a very powerful dynamic in terms of the intergenerational exchange, but there is also a lot of challenges associated with grandparents raising grandchildren.
And Danita, how did you get involved with the program?
Well, being one of Dr. McDowell's students, she came up with this idea, and she approached me when it was really kind of a serendipity, because when she first talked about it, we didn't have a whole lot of plans, but because of my background, understanding the primary role that grandparents play in their grandchildren's lives, I immediately thought, this is a great opportunity for me. And so I was just, it's something I'm passionate about, and I was glad when she came to me with the opportunity.
That's great. So how did you get the group started? I assume that it was within the structure of the Palestine Missionary Baptist Church?
Yes, it was. The first thing that we did was attend their block party, which they had last summer. And there were a bunch of tables set up in terms of information and health opportunities. And so we had a table there, and Danita and another student were there, and I sent them out to sort of work the crowd and talk to people who looked like they might be grandparents. And so we were just trying to gauge interest and need. And so we had grandparents sort of telling us what their challenges were in terms of raising their grandchildren, and just asking them whether they would be interested in participating in a support group.
Why don't you tell us, Danita, a little bit about some of the challenges that these families are facing?
Many of the families, one of the challenges that we have found is they're more informal with the grandparents raising their grandchildren, which is to say it's not exactly under legal. So it's a more or less a, you take the children down and, you know, take care of them until I can kind of get back on my feet, which at that point it doesn't allow them to qualify for any sort of financial assistance or any other type of resources. So what we found is that some of these grandparents are raising the grandchildren on their own income, which is most of the time Social Security. They're on Social Security checks. And so our goal had become at that point, once we kind of sat down and talked, what can we do to help these families? What can we do to help put them in touch with resources to help kind of ease the burden of raising the grandchildren? Plus, not to mention all the stresses, the mental stress and those types of things that grandparents may endure while raising the grandchildren, starting all over again, raising a new set of children.
And when you say there's no official legal custody arrangement, it's not that there's nothing illegal about it. It's just that
they haven't gone through the court system to attain the proper documentation to say you are the custodial parent of this child. It's, you know, again, a verbal, more or less a verbal agreement of, well, I can't take care of my children. Mom's going to take care of them, or, you know, I'm going to step in and take my grandchildren because the parents are unable for whatever reason. Some are incarcerated. Some have, you know, died. Some just, you know, maybe on drugs or what, but for whatever reason, these grandparents have ended up with their grandchildren, and oftentimes they, you know, the communication barriers, the generational gaps of communication, all those problems are there. And so we're trying to step in to say, hey, how can we help? What do you need from us?
I can imagine that uncertain kind of arrangement would lead to some of its own difficulties for both the grandparents and the children?
Right. As great as the challenges are in raising children, these children often have additional challenges because frequently there is some sort of trauma in their lives that has led to them having to leave their family and have their grandparents raise them or take over parenting them. And these traumas can be anything from physical or mental health issues experienced by their parents, the death of a parent, as Danita mentioned, incarceration. Sometimes it's just poverty, and generations have to live together. So the parents might be present in the home, but because they are working, might be working two jobs, the grandparents are primarily responsible for childcare and looking after these children.
Do you have any actual data about the number of both the grandparents and children who are in this kind of a situation? And I understand that it's probably a fairly fluid.
Yes, and it's hard to count, but we do have some census data that says across the country, across the United States, there are almost 3 million families where grandparents are responsible for their grandchildren. In the state of Missouri, it's about 50,000 families. And just here in the Kansas City metro area, it's over 9,000 families where grandparents are the head of household and having primary responsibility for raising their grandchildren. So it's a big problem.
It is. So in terms of actual numbers, that 9,000 would translate into like 30,000 people.
Yes. I mean, most households have more than one grandchild.
Right.
Is that? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so the grandparents, are they, is it usually a couple or is it sometimes even single grandparent trying to do this on his or her own?
It's both. We have found where there's a couple and single family or single parent, grandparent raising the grandchildren. Just from my own personal experience, I was fortunate enough to have both my grandparents living, and they both were able to kind of take care of our needs. But even still, with grandma at home and only, you know, grandpa or papa going out to work, it is still a strain on the family.
Yes, absolutely.
There are, it's true, there are couples and single grandparents, and but by and large, it is the single grandmother who mm-hmm. is trying to raise these grandchildren.
And typically, what are the ages, or maybe there's nothing typical about it, what ages of children are we talking about?
There is nothing typical about it. It's all the way from infancy all the way up through high school.
Yeah. All right. So what kind of, it's not hard to imagine what kind of resources these families need. So what is it that you're trying to do to help discover and connect them?
Well, one of the main needs is sort of, one grandmother expressed it recently to me as, and I'm sure parents experience this as well, just the need to have some adult time. Mm-hmm. So if you have small grandchildren in the house and they consume you, you just need a break. Mm-hmm. And so sort of stress reduction is one of our primary aims in our groups. Allowing grandparents the opportunity to get together and to talk to one another about sharing the particular issues that they may be facing and solutions, mm-hmm. getting advice from one another. So at Palestine Church, we have started a small group, and we're meeting, started out once a month, and then we ended up meeting twice a month for the group to get together, and we had different topics each week, from behavior problems in your grandchildren to managing stress, to self-esteem and building self-esteem in your grandchildren. And so we find grandparents talking to one another, asking advice, you know, what did you do in this situation? And people really sharing. Mm-hmm. And the grandparents have really enjoyed that opportunity just to express themselves with like-minded people who are experiencing a lot of the same thing.
And I think that a lot of the grandparents have found it helpful to, like you're kind of saying, to share their struggles with like-minded people in terms of, I'm not going through this alone. I'm not doing this by myself. There's others out here that's dealing with the same mental stress and struggles that I am, or feeling exhausted. And so they know, this allows grandparents to know they're not alone, that there's others in the same situation as them, and there's someone there to.
I can imagine how that important and how helpful that would be to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they have these get-togethers, is there child care available, like at the church?
Well, we planned for that, but in this particular case, these grandmas have school-age children, so during the day their children were primarily in school.
Oh, so the meetings take place during the day.
Over the lunch hour, mm-hmm. actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So some of them, of course, because the kids are in school during the school year anyway, have a little relief during that time.
Yes. One of the things that we would like to do is try to find ways to expand our program so that we can reach more grandparents, recognizing that we might need an evening session, because we had more grandparents interested than we were able to accommodate in this group just due to scheduling problems. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes the grandparents are dealing with these kids and also working during the day.
So, yes, right. I can imagine. My own background is in corrections, and I know from my personal experience that a lot of people in corrections were subject to childhood trauma. I'm particularly sensitive to that topic. What resources are available for these kids?
Well, there are resources available for those kind of kids through their schools and through different kinds of community groups. And really our goal is to, on an individual basis, assess the needs of a family and then try to connect those people to resources. So we are not the resource, the grassroots resource, but we are the group who wants to try and say, hey, this is what's available out there. And so we try to address those needs on a sort of a case-by-case basis.
Danita, do you want to talk a little bit about the resources that you're attempting to find for these grandparents?
Yes. Well, one of the first things we're planning to do is to go ahead and get a website set up where grandparents can actually go on there and link, because sometimes one challenges can be is grandparents may not be as comfortable using the internet and, you know, accessing it and moving around. So to be able to go online and click on this link or call, and we can talk to them and walk them through, like, maybe you can call here. We actually have a booklet that we put together of various resources, like for groceries or help with utilities, those types of things that, like you say, it's kind of, we know what people need. We have that book available for people. But the thing of it is to try to get the website up so that grandparents can go on there, click on those links, and find where they need to go. And if they don't find that help, then to call. And I think it's important to mention we do return phone calls. If you were to call and leave a message, we do return all phone calls.
Why don't you give us that number?
Sure. That is 816-235-2490. That's 816-235-2490. And that is my office phone. And if you leave a message, we, as Danita says, we will get back to you.
Okay, excellent. And if somebody would like to get involved or they have an idea of a resource that might be available, what do you, I mean, I guess
yeah,
the first question.
Take those kinds of calls as well. As Danita was saying there, AARP, a number of years ago, produced a booklet about grandparents raising grandchildren in the state of Missouri. I think it was AARP Missouri. So what we did last year was take that booklet, and we had a group of students who then investigated everything that was in the booklet to update it. I mean, phone numbers change, websites change, things like that. So then we have an updated version, but so that's the kind of thing that we would like to post on our website. And if getting on the internet is not easy or not possible, then people can give us a call, and we will try to address those needs. But the idea is we call our group GPS, Grandparent Support. So we have the idea that it's a journey and we can help you find your way. That's kind of the image that we're trying to put out there. So we can connect people to resources, and that's an easy thing for us to do.
What about housing? I could imagine that somebody who may, a grandparent as they've aged, are living alone or in a small apartment and then take on this additional responsibility. How is housing a challenge for these grandparents?
Yes, housing is a huge challenge. And one solution that has been put forth in Kansas City is there is an apartment complex called Pemberton Park at Cleveland and Swope Parkway. And it is an apartment building that you have to be a grandparent raising your grandchildren in order to live there. So it is a very nice existing resource. So everyone who lives next to you is in the same situation that you're in. So it is kind of its own little support network there. And it's a nice, the apartments are very nice. I've been there a number of times, have toured the apartments. They have 2, 3, and 4 bedroom apartments there for grandparents. So if you have a number of grandchildren, they can accommodate that.
Right. Is there more housing such as that in the works that you know of?
Not that I know of here in Kansas City. And
none that I know of.
You know, one of the other initiatives that we're working on is an idea of neighboring. And so aging in the community is possible if there is a community. So if we get people to understand that they can work together for mutual benefit, then I think this neighboring idea can be very powerful.
And would that possibly mean they could, you know, take turns taking care of each other's children?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, formally, there are other kinds of housing models like co-housing, where you might share a home in exchange for childcare. But I think if we can get people organized, then any kinds of these sorts of exchange relationships could be developed.
Right. And what about meals? Just thinking on a real practical basis. I mean, an older single grandparent or a couple, you know, your eating patterns change as you age, and I can imagine how difficult it would be to start, you know, rethinking how
thought that I had never actually considered.
Well, one grandparent kind of said that it's kind of funny because their grandchild want to eat a hot dog, and they're saying, well, I can't eat a hot dog,
right.
And so just, yeah, that ideal of having to prepare something for the grandchild may be different from them, like their meal. Maybe they need to be on like a heart healthy diet or something like that, but the kid wants hot dogs and potato chips. So yeah, that is definitely something else in the home that grandparents have to contend with.
And that's not something that ever goes away.
No, it's not.
What's on the top of your wish list for this group?
I think we really appreciate opportunities like this to get the word out. And I think that's been one of our challenges, because a lot of times the grandparents are just so busy that they can't even take advantage of potential resources, or they don't know about them. And so we are trying to, we've done some programs. We have a program that's right now just in the planning stages through the Concerned Clergy Coalition. They're doing a series on the state of the Black family, and we're going to have one of those meetings dedicated to grandparenting, so people can look out or watch for announcements related to that if they're interested in meeting us or finding more information.
Why don't you tell us again how people can get in touch with you and your group?
Sure. I can give you my phone number. That is 816-235-2490. 816-235-2490.
And the name of your program again?
Is GPS, Grandparent Support.
this is great. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
It's the 420 Drug War News, and this is California Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom.
Our top story is one of the most controversial issues on the ballot, legalizing marijuana. And tonight, one of California's leaders was in San Diego to endorse it.
Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom is a proponent of Prop 64. KUSI's Sasha Fu spoke with him. She brings us the story in tonight's Prop Report. Sasha?
Sandra Nallen, there's probably no state official with more thorough knowledge of the marijuana issue than Gavin Newsom. California's lieutenant governor organized a blue ribbon panel back in 2013 to start looking at some of the consequences of legalizing marijuana. All of that was prep work for a decision that Gavin Newsom calls a game changer.
To me, this is a social justice issue. This is a criminal justice issue. This is about racial justice. This is about economic justice. I think the war on drugs has been an abject failure.
Surrounded by other advocates for legalizing marijuana, a religious leader, a former prosecutor, a mother whose son was convicted of marijuana use, Newsom says he's supporting this measure because of what he sees as the devastating effects of making marijuana illegal.
I think the war on drugs has been a war on poor people. I think the war on drugs has been a war on people of color. I think the war on drugs has failed us. I am not pro-cannabis. I'm anti-prohibition.
Yeah, this disastrous war continues to ensnare tens of thousands of people in the criminal justice system in our state every year.
Gretchen Bergman is the executive director of a parents group that supports Prop 64. In 1991, her 20-year-old son was arrested for marijuana possession. In asking for the prohibition to be lifted, Bergman says this will keep people like her son from being punished.
The violence that he got subjected to behind bars was just, you know, he's kind of a gentle soul. So it was a terrible experience, and he's just one of so many.
The lieutenant governor covered a broad range of topics from taxation.
15% tax, sales tax would apply at the local level. Sales tax would be exempted for medical marijuana.
He also said that towns and cities would have local control to make their own rules on marijuana businesses.
For example, if your community feels that this is not right for you, we give local control.
If voters decide to make marijuana legal, people who are convicted for some marijuana offenses can have their records wiped clean.
My son, for example, can go back and get his record expunged.
Newsom says passing Prop 64 won't make the drug cartels disappear.
That said, 20% of the money that's dedicated from this is going to go to law enforcement to target the black market, to go after the cartels.
He sees the greatest good in ending the war on drugs and restoring social justice.
This is a game changer for this state. It's a game changer for this country.
Dean Becker, DrugTruth.net.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the host and the guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, or its staff and volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show episodes and podcasts on the Jaws of Justice radio page on Facebook. If you have a show idea or you want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. And you can always listen to us live on the KKFI website at kkfi.org. This is your engineer for Jaws of Justice Radio, Beth Pike. And be sure to tune in Thursday mornings at 6 a.m. when I host the Thirsty Thursday edition of your Morning Buzz. Our outro music is Better Man, and that's from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Khadija and the White Guy at 9 a.m. on Thursdays, and then Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 on Fridays. Up next is Beautician's Blues. That's with Luscious Lynn. And then at noon, it's Arts Magazine with Michael Hogue. You'll want to stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon, and then Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Round out your day south of the border with Fiesta Musical, Compartiendo en Familia, and Compartiendo en Noche.